Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, 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 much more. See how many muches that was, Eric?
That was very muchly.
That was a lot of muches. This is episode 38, Handsomeites. We are recording on a Monday because Super Bowl yesterday. It was the saddest
Super Bowl ever.
Well, only sad if you're rooting for Denver or you wanted to watch a competitive football game.
I know. It was embarrassing. I don't know why. I guess not enough nerds care about the football, but it seems like you could really do something with all the sad faces that Peyton Manning was making.
That's the thing online, actually. It's been around for a long time. It's called the Manning face.
Fantastic.
It was coined by Bill Simmons. Like, he was basically the first internet sports writer. He coined that in, like, 2004 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the face Manning makes when things are going badly. And that's basically the Manning face.
Well, there we go. He made some Manning faces last night.
It was the entirety of the game, almost.
It was. Well, I mean, when people are, like, hiking the ball, like, 10 feet over your head, getting safeties, and then all of a sudden people score as soon as the ball's kicked to them. I mean, how could that have been just more of a beatdown? It was embarrassing to watch.
Yeah, that's generally how it happens in these. All the Super Bowls that have been the best offense versus the best defense.
Yeah.
Best defense, like, almost always wins. Like, it's not... Like, the last time this happened, it was when Tampa went against Oakland, and Tampa killed Oakland. Best offense, Tampa had the best defense, and Tampa killed them in the same kind of game. I was trying to think of that quote from the IT crowd. Wasn't that a ridiculous display last night? Or
something like that? Wasn't that a ludicrous display last night?
Yes, exactly.
No. It was, did you see that ludicrous display?
Did you see that ludicrous display?
Did you see that ludicrous display last night? That was a ludicrous display.
It was. So, yeah, sports ball.
Sports ball.
Sports ball. Let's jump into checking in. I'll have a couple podcasts to check in with, and neither of them. Well, one of them is definitely not about complaining. The other one has some in it, but
yes, I think I know where you're going with this.
Do you?
Yeah.
Expectations.
Yes, I have many expectations of you, big boy.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Don't make promises you can't keep.
Well, I can keep promises.
You the promise keeper?
Why don't you tell me about some podcasts, you some bitch?
Jesus, with the language. Yes, I have a job now where I can listen to just whatever I want all day, so now I'm listening to many podcasts. The two we've been listening to a lot lately, and these are relatively popular, but they're new to me. The first one is Comedy Bang Bang, hosted by Scott Aukerman with Paul F. Tompkins, who is never appears as himself. Paul F. Tompkins always appears as other characters. It's kind of improv. He just has a whole bunch of comedians on, and they just, you know, are silly, which is great. I think I was listening to the Best of 2013. That's what I would say. If you want to get started in that, just listen to there's four episodes of the Best of 2013. They count down their best episodes of the last year. And
sounds like a good call.
Yeah, my personal favorite was a spot from one of their live shows where Paul F. Tompkins is doing his Werner Herzog impersonation, and he is reading his review of a hotel on Yelp.
That sounds like genius.
It is amazing.
That's so good. That was Paul F. Tompkins, you said?
Yeah, doing Werner Herzog, and it's great.
Comedians have really done well. They've really embraced podcasts. It totally does. It's just a really great way to get content out and, you know, talk directly to fans and test stuff out and all the things that I think they look for. But
yeah.
I don't know. I tried listening to Paul F. Tompkins, like, I can't remember what it was called. It was the Pod F. Tomcast or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's one of his other podcasts.
It was just a little too dicky aroundy.
Yeah, that's, I think that'd be the main complaint about this as well, is that a lot of it is just, you know, in between, like, there's really good, brilliant stuff in it.
Yes.
And then there's also a lot of, like, just waiting for that brilliant stuff.
Well, I guess that is the way of the podcast, that you get the wheat and the chaff.
Yeah, but there's a couple bits of him doing Werner Herzog, and that is just the funniest thing to me.
Did you ever read his, a couple seasons ago on American Idol, where he was supposedly getting paid $15 a word to write synopses of the episodes?
No.
He wasn't really getting paid that, but it was a good gag, because he's like, I like this very, 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 very much.
Yes.
it was quite hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, the best ofs are, they're probably the best thing to listen to, because it's only the best bits.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though some of them, it was fan voted, so some of them are very, like, mm-hmm. just weird, existential, strange, very weird things. Like, it's definitely a lot of heavy improv and weird comedy. Like, it's very, like, Monty Python, which, again, is very, sometimes it's hilarious, and sometimes they just fall flat if they don't, you know, if it's just like, here's a weird thing, let's try it. That's Comedy Bang Bang. The other one is Hardcore History with Dan Carlin.
Yep, this is a big podcast. It's a very popular one.
Yeah, it is. And I've gotten recommended it many, many times, but I'm like, they're just really long. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like,
it could be like 4 hours.
Yeah, and I was listening. I listened to, over the length of an entire day, I listened to just the Mongols, the Wrath of the Khans series, but it was like 10 hours of, you know, the history of Genghis Khan and all, and the entire Mongol forces in the Middle Ages.
That sounds excellent.
It was really, I've always been fascinated by them, and hearing their history, like, it made me even more impressed by their strength and how very, a few little things, unlucky events happened to them, like basically the deaths of their leaders,
mm-hmm.
and otherwise they would have taken over all of Europe and Asia. I mean, they were very, very close to it. At one point, they had defeated, they had taken over China, the almost entirety of Asia, they're at the door of Europe, and had taken out the only army of any substantial size in Europe. And at that exact moment, their Khan dies, and they have to withdraw. If that didn't happen, they would have marched all the way through the Atlantic Ocean, probably. Had vast technological and strategic advantages over anything any other army in the world could put out. It's really, well, but
were they the horseback archers? Is that what their advantage was?
Exactly. Okay. And they, until like gunpowder weapons became prominent.
Yes,
they were the most like the strongest military force on the planet. No one could. The only way you could beat them is by hiring other horse archers who were, you know, schooled in the same
mm-hmm.
tactics and strategy.
See, that's what you're checking in with, the Mongol hordes.
The Mongol hordes. But Dan Carlin, I history podcast could be very difficult, but he's really good storyteller and clearly very enthusiastic about history, which makes it, you know, interesting and good.
Did you know he used to work for Rush Limbaugh?
I did not know that.
He is he's not a Rush Limbaugh-esque conservative. It was one of the reasons he didn't fit in with Rush Limbaugh very well. But that's sort of where his you can hear it in the way he talks. It's sort of where his radio voice comes from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rush Limbaugh is a great radio person. I mean, like, he's very skilled at, you know.
I would say he's skilled. He certainly is.
Yeah, but, I mean, his personal politics are abhorrent to me, but he's a great radio talent.
And mm-hmm.
Dan Carlin certainly has the same skills. He's a great storyteller and can keep you glued listening. I listened for 10 hours straight and I didn't, you know, ever get bored with it or, you know, get tired of he's good. His cadence is good and he's able to tie the narrative together very well.
Magnificent.
Exactly. What do you got, Eric? What are you checking in with?
Ooh, the world is just all a tingle with anticipation.
Anticipation.
Yes. I picked up a Chromecast.
Ooh, how is it? You like it?
So far, I'm a little frustrated with it. It's good for Netflix. I like it okay. My two big frustrations are the audio has to be done through HDMI, and which means I'm going to have to buy a receiver that does HDMI audio, which means even if I can find one on Craigslist, I'm going to be out like $200, maybe even $300. And a new one they're outrageously expensive. It's either that or listen to it through my terrible television speakers.
Hmm.
The thing that really bums me out is the Plex app locks you out. Like I have bought several Plex apps. Do you know what Plex is?
I do not.
Plex is a service that you put on a PC in your network that serves up content to other clients. On my PC, I have movie files, and it streams them over my network a lot like Netflix.
Okay.
But it's with my video files. But one of my goals was to get Plex running on my new television through the Chromecast, and it is locked out. You have to be a Plex subscriber, which is a crock of shit.
How much does that cost?
I don't know. It's not outrageously expensive, and it's a pretty good way to support them, but I've already bought like their apps on three different platforms. I feel like I should be able to use it on my Chromecast. It's kind of frustrating, but it is what it is, right?
I wanted to get one because it was like we want to start watching, you know, all the TV shows that we've mm-hmm. been missing for the past years: Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. all the Adventure Time. I've been wanting to watch Avatar,
mm-hmm.
and you know, numerous other shows, but. You know, it means I have to. I have an HDMI out, but I mean, I have to lug my laptop over there, plug it into the TV, blah 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 blah.
Well, the thing about the Chromecast is it will. One of the nice things about it is it will mirror your laptop.
Yeah,
that's one of the coolest features, and one that I have not experimented with, but I'm looking forward to messing around with it.
How much is it? Like $35?
Yeah, it's outrageously cheap. And as it stands, there's not a lot developed for it.
Mm.
I just read, just before we sat down and start talking, an article on, I want to say it was on Ars Technica, where they're talking about trying to stir up more interest in developing for Chromecast. And I think it's got a lot of potential. It's, at its heart, a very cool gadget. But as it stands, it's a little underpowered because no one's making stuff for it yet.
Yeah, at least it has Google behind it.
Mm-hmm.
They're continually pumping money into Google Plus, even though no one uses it. So,
well, it's not like it's terrible. It's only terrible because no one uses it.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, Facebook is literally terrible, but it's good because everyone's on Facebook.
Precisely.
It's tautology. Like, no one is on Google Plus because no one is on Google Plus. There is nothing really all that wrong about Google Plus.
No, it's just Facebook got there first.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
they did it reasonably well, and you know, early enough to catch people's attention. I don't think anyone will ever adopt Google Plus, although it is kind of unreal that people actually. It does seem that there are a lot of subscribers, like Locker Gnome has something like 8 million people that subscribe on Google Plus. I don't know. It's got a subset of nerds that are all about it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are completely anti-Facebook, but they'll have a Google Plus account.
Facebook is pretty repugnant. If I could avoid it, I would. But that's like with our generation, that's like saying, "Oh, I'm not into the phone." You know, I'm just not going to call people. It's literally that bad. It's how I communicate with, I would say, a third to half of my friends.
It's so pervasive. We're using it right now to talk. So
I guess that we are. Isn't that disgusting?
I'm kind of, ambivalent.
Well.
About Facebook. It has its good. It has its ups and downs.
Fair enough.
You got anything else?
Not really. Nothing worth discussing. Because I worked on Saturday.
Oh, man.
It was awesome.
That doesn't sound awesome.
Do you want to hear about how my Linux project is progressing?
Sure.
Linux is really difficult. I don't know if you realize that.
I've never done anything with Linux, but have I can imagine.
This is entirely command line Linux, you know?
Okay.
It's pretty rad because, you know, you turn the server on, and it's a black screen with white text that says log in. That is how this machine turns on, and it's amazing because it's so just seems so bare bones, but it's so powerful and can do so many awesome things. But I don't know if I've talked to you too much about it, but a friend of mine a good friend of mine from my days at writing at How To Geek. His name is Yatri Trivedi, and he's something of a Linux guru, and we've been sort of putting our heads together to figure out what we can do with it, and we've been solving some problems. It's going slowly but steadily. I poke at it every so often. A lot of figuring out syntax and the so-called right way to do things. Linux is hateful. If you don't do stuff exactly right, it doesn't work. And then it turns out you've broken 10 other things.
What's the end goal?
Well, I'm making network, or right now it is, network attached storage for I'm using it at work.
Okay.
As part of the whole work through. We already have a plan in place. We're going to set up automatic backup that runs, periodically. But it's like, you can set it to do like different, like I can have one program run that syncs things and another one that, I mean, it just really depends on how I want to do it. It's just very customizable and it's very open, and you can tweak almost anything. It's kind of fun, It's like the nerd version of like restoring a classic car or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're just sort of like exchanging emails and talking about this stuff. It's been fun.
Getting your hands dirty.
Yeah. Yeah. I've figured out way more than I thought I ever would. It's been very, very interesting. Linuxy.
All right. You ready for some weekly floppies, Eric?
I'm ready to flop it out.
Spectacular.
Mm.
So, folks, this is time for weekly floppies. We're going to start off with Marvel. And Thor, God of Thunder, number 18. We have not been reading. We haven't read Thor in a while now.
We haven't. I was starting to pine for the fjords.
Yeah, this they just finished an arc the one that had the dark elf,
old split face.
Old split face, the one that was in the movie as well.
That was his name, wasn't it?
It was his name, Old Split Face.
Old Split Face.
I can't think of it right now, so that's good as any name.
He was a prospector. Old Split Face. Oh, peaches.
What is that? What is that? Okay, whatever.
That's the old prospector voice. You don't know?
No, I do not know.
Oh, fiddlesticks.
We might have to include him in a segment at some point.
I do so love being an old prospector.
Yeah, this
There's gold in them there hills, Robbie.
Are we going to talk about this book or just going to talk about prospecting?
I think we ought to talk about this Thor God of Thunder book.
Okay, good.
I'm done.
It's written by Jason Aaron. Art by Das Pastoros. Letters by Josepina and... That's all the credits. This is a one-off issue before seeing the next arc launch back with Esad Ribic back on art.
He did the cover.
He's done all the covers.
Yeah, well, he's not off art. He's off interiors.
Okay, he's off interiors. I think he's been working on Avengers books, actually.
Has he?
Yeah. Well, they're not out yet, but he's been solicited for a couple of Avengers books. This is a one-off story. It starts with Thor inside of the mouth of a dragon.
That it does.
It does. And basically, you find he does no. This village has solicited him to help them with this some problem. And they think it's a dragon. But it ends up, it was trolls. And Thor killed the trolls with the help of the dragon, and then they got drunk. As you're wont to do after you kill trolls.
Yes.
But then it kind of evolves from there. You see that both the dragon and Thor both share, like, you know, angry father figures who expect more from them. And then we kind of see Thor having to deal with this dragon who's kind of out of control. I thought this was a blast.
It was certainly fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This artist looks like he has looked at a lot of Milo Manara drawings. Do you know Milo Manara?
Yeah, the porn comics.
Well, I don't like calling it porn comics, but okay. It would be an apt thing to say, honestly.
Nude lady comics.
Yes. Well, to be honest, he probably has done many straight-up porn comics, but, okay. You know, I just... I think when you describe something as pornography, you're saying it lacks artistic merit, and I think that even if something has a lot of sex in it, it does not lack artistic merit.
I mean that in the best way possible.
Yes, porn is so delightful.
Like, well, I keep up with Alan Moore's. I agree with his stance when he did Lost Girls. He's just like, it's porn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Lost Girls is. I mean, I don't like it that much, but it's very beautiful, and you know, it's not. It has sex in it, and Alan Moore calls it porn because he doesn't like the delineation between erotica and all those words and all that. And I kind of agree with him on that. We're off on a tangent. The art, I like the art on this. Do you like it?
Well, there's no pornography in it, so there I can't like it.
Okay, none.
There's no pornography. I don't in know this if you book, like, but if it looks you like
dragons.
It looks like a known pornographer. According to Alan Moore.
Exactly.
And me.
I thought it was really enjoyable.
No, it's fun, and it's got a lot of vomit in it.
It does. It does have a lot of vomit in it.
And since there is so much vomit in it, I'm glad it is not pornography. that'd be right unpleasant there, Robbie.
It would. Although, I mean, I'm not saying pornography can't have vomit in it.
Well, it shouldn't if I'm going to watch it.
Okay. I really like the fact that this dragon, his father, is just like Odin, and Thor just like falling asleep on his bed after he's been gone for 3 days and he comes back.
It was pretty special, wasn't it?
Covered in blood and
vomit.
And vomit. Yeah.
A lot of vomit in this book. I don't know if we said that, but
there's a lot of vomit.
There's a lot of vomit. I like how he's like wearing his little hot pants and he's just all spread eagle there.
He's like, I'm tired. I'm going to sleep.
Yep.
Go to bed.
Roll around and vomit.
He's probably got all the vomit out of him at this point.
Maybe so.
He's probably just tired. He's at the just tired portion of the hangover.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is a nice way to wrap up this arc, I guess you want to say. And I'm ready for the next volume. Again, it's just, and I read all the way up to this. I've been reading it, and it was good. It's just, it's so hard to match that the God Butcher and God Bomb art together. Those were so, it was so good.
It's glorious.
Yeah, and now Esad Rivik will be back on the art. He's been off of the art this book until the next arc. So I'm excited to see him back because they belong to each other. He should always be on this book.
They should kiss you always.
Absolutely. I'm down for the kissing. As long as it's Thor God of Thunder doing it.
I think it would be.
Okay, good. Alright. I'm bi, if it's not clear.
I think that it's certainly worth buying. I do wish that there was a little bit more meat to it, but it's Thor God of Thunder. It's a dynamite little book.
Double buy.
So yes, double buy.
Double buy.
Just calm it down there, killer.
I'm so excited.
You're so excited for Thor God of Thunder.
I liked it. Next up is Uncanny Avengers number 16, written by Rick Remender, art by Steve McNiven, with inks by John Dell and Jay Leiston, Laura Martin doing the colors, Clayton Cowles on the letters. This is like the big throwdown between the Apocalypse Twins, Thor, and Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America's quite fucked up at this point.
Yeah, he's got hamburger face, doesn't he?
He does have half a hamburger face.
I hope this is forever, that he just looks like hamburger. He looks like Hamburger Jones. I don't know who Hamburger Jones is, but he looks just like that.
I don't either. But they're thrown down with the Apocalypse Twins. Thor's trying to get his celestial killing axe back so he can deal with Exitar the Executioner. I love saying that name.
It's on the special side, isn't it?
It is.
Hey, God, these Celestials are so ridiculous.
They are.
There's been a lot of Celestials lately, haven't there?
Yeah, we're going to be touching a lot on them during Nerd Boy Book Club. But
we certainly will. Spoiler alert, gang.
Spoiler alert. But I like this a lot.
This was a fucking awesome book.
Yeah. McNiven is great as always.
He's I don't know if it's hyperbole to say he's at the top of his game, but this is a gorgeous looking book. Were you talking about the Thor holding Captain America's shield? Is that what you were geeking out about?
That is one of those moments. It's pretty awesome.
That's the fastball special moment for you.
No, that was an X-Factor. Certainly, this is another one of those where it's like in wrestlers, like, use a different finisher from a different wrestler.
Yes.
They, like, steal a finisher. It's like that.
Yeah, of course you would tie it back to wrestling.
Of course I would. Why would I can tie, I tie everything back to wrestling, if possible. Yeah, this is great. I don't know what else I can add, except it's fucking awesome.
It's pretty great, and I liked, it seems to have a different tone than the past couple of books, and I liked that. It was just a lot of ass kicking and a lot of fun. The other ones were all gloom and doom, but there was some really intense stuff happening.
The fucking Thor shoving, it through the portal, and his arm getting all burnt up, and he's just doing it, just powering through. He's got like a skeleton arm. Like, just hanging out.
Well, I don't think he's got a skeleton arm, but he's a little tore up, a little toe up.
It doesn't look healthy.
It definitely looks like he's lost some HPs.
He has, but he's still Thor. He still has a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's gearing up for another issue. I'm very excited to see where this is going.
He's gonna Yarnbjorn him.
Yarnbjorn. Get me a Yarnbjorn. Yarnbjorn, Eric. I want an axe that can fell a celestial.
Well, I'll have to work on making you one. I'll probably just keep it myself, though.
I know. You'd probably look better with it anyway. Honestly.
Yeah. It's not a hammer, but I would probably look dead sexy toting it around.
I was about to say, but it's still a Nordic weapons, I think.
Yes, it suits me.
They do suit you. I'm a buy.
Yeah, I total buy, 100% buy on this book.
Double buy.
It's a confident double buy. This book fucking rocks.
Yeah. It's hitting its stride.
It really is. They got to be closing it up, aren't they? This arc,
I think, is 18 is the last one. So two more issues.
Okay.
That seems about right to me.
I think that's what it felt like anyway.
That's it for Marvel. Next up is DC, or DC / Vertigo. We're doing Dead Boy Detectives number 2 with... Toby Litt is writer, but then Mark Buckingham is story and pencils, with Gary Erskine and Andrew Pepoy on inks, Lee Lefferts doing colors, and Todd Klein doing letters. This issue is focusing more on the girl than the boy detectives, honestly. And it does seem to be leading in the direction you had suggested in the first one, that they end up teaming up.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be pointing us in that direction.
It seems unlikely that it's not going to happen. No. I feel like she's going to become a really important character. It almost feels like, well, I won't say she's our proxy, but she's certainly, right now, she's the most interesting thing in this.
Yeah, I agree.
She's weird and she's vulnerable, and you want to know things about her. I don't know. What's your thoughts about her as a character?
I certainly find her more enjoyable than either of the... You get a lot more time with her in this than you do with either of the boys, so it's...
They might as well not even be in this book.
I know, they're just kind of in the background floating around.
It is pretty adorable that they put on mustaches, though.
They do have... That is... I was about to say something about them both wearing mustaches.
It's not as cool as Mustache Hulk, but it'll do. That's Mustache true. Ghost Boys works. They're invisible. Why do they need disguises? That's such a goofy thing.
Those other ghouls can see them, right? The other boys.
I guess, but they're all ghosts. You think that it's like zombies seeing each other? They're like, oh, that's a zombie.
I don't know. It fits in with their like.
I think we're playing. Putting a little too much thought into the story about dead boys that wear mustaches.
I'm really interested in this little flashback we see where just this girl is. Mm-hmm.
The ghost eats her friend.
It reminded me of Frighteners.
Huh.
Have you seen that?
I have not seen Frighteners.
Oh man, you need to see Frighteners. My favorite movie. My favorite Peter Jackson movie.
Okay.
It's the last movie he did before Lord of the Rings, I think.
I did not realize that.
It was Michael J. Fox.
I knew Michael J. Fox was in it somehow.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. But this is that scene reminded me of it. I'm curious about what that seems like. It has greater import than just being a creepy thing.
Yes, it. If they don't come back to it, I would be truly, truly shocked.
We even get a shot of death. We have a cameo, a little death cameo.
No, just an exact copy of how she looked in that book.
Yes, exactly.
She looks all adorable, and I want to say 80s, but it was in the 90s.
Yes, it was.
In her workout clothes.
I wouldn't say this is a bad comic.
Huh?
I would not say that this is a bad comic.
No, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I think it has its problems, but it didn't stop me from enjoying it.
No.
I have a soft spot in my heart for this series, so I think it's cute, and I want to see more.
I would say I think my official recommendation is it's good. I just don't think I'm going to continue to read it.
Fair enough.
Maybe on in trade.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm no. Trade. This is a trade story for sure. It would be something I would own an odd couple of trades of, and be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I guess that's a buy. Just
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a buy. I think it's clear how we feel about it. It's yeah. it's a cute little story. It's fun so far, and I like where it's going. It's nicely illustrated and competent. And yeah. I think this would be a good one to look out for trades for.
Yeah. Next up, Flash number 27. We have not read a Flash book of the New 52.
No, it feels a little outside of our wheelhouse here. It's like kind of wacky to read this. And what is it with the cover art being so much worse than the interior art?
I don't know.
Isn't that like really kind of disturbing? Like the cover is not conceptual at all. It tells you nothing about the story. It's just Flash and there's stuff happening.
Does it say who the
and he also are? He's got a I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah, it's by Pascal Ferry and Matt Hollingsworth is doing the cover. It's Matt Hollingsworth has done a lot of work on Hawkeye. But I don't know Pascal Ferry. I don't know. It's weird. It doesn't have any kind of correlation to this book at all, and it isn't as good.
No.
As what's inside. This is written by, where is the credits? Brian Buccellato, cannot ever say his name. Brian Buccellato with Patrick Zercher on art, Matt Hollingsworth there. He's the colorist in this. He's the colorist inside. And Carlos M. Manguel on letters. The Flash finds a whole bunch of dead bodies while he's fighting some super villains. And he's trying to dig in and find out where they came from, basically, as his alter ego is really doing most of the work in this issue. Because he's a cop.
Yeah.
It's news to me. I didn't know anything about the Flash in the New 52, so.
Well, this is Barry, right? Barry Allen?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. It's really wacky that he's a cop. Like, it seems like an odd call. I wonder if that's ever been done before in a superhero comic, like your alter ego is a, like, you're a cop by day, you're a vigilante by night.
I'm sure it has been. It sounds like something I've read somewhere.
I guess. It's just odd.
It could be interesting if done correctly. It's not terrible in this.
Like, I don't understand it. Like it's... This is not a bad book, in my opinion.
No.
Like, I think it's well illustrated, and I'm compelled to read it. But it strikes me as a really silly concept that a superhero would... Like a superhero cop drama done like this. It just feels so bizarre that, like, it's this gritty cop drama about a serial killer, and then he puts on red underwear and beats up a guy that shoots rainbows.
I just kind of go, superhero books.
I guess, but it feels oddly incongruous to me, and I don't know. It just seems strange to me.
Eh.
It.
He wants to fight crime.
I guess, but it just seems. I don't dislike it, but DC is just... I don't know. I just kind of don't get this thrust that they're on, that this is a book about guys in tights being thwarted from robbing a bunch of diamond stores. And in Marvel, we're reading books about superheroes becoming gods.
I don't know.
It's just... I don't know. It's a very different point of view.
I'm not sure. Flash... I've heard mostly good things about New 52. I mean, aside from the fact that
like I said, I enjoy the book. I think it's competently written, and it compels me to read it. I don't think that there's, I don't know that there's really too much better that you can say about, you know, something that's written.
Yeah.
I could see myself reading a couple of different, a couple more issues of this and seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
I just think that the premise is just so bizarre and doesn't really make sense in terms of, you know, cop by day and suit. I mean, it just...
I'm trying to think of another hero that's, that has used that.
It just it just doesn't make sense. It's like someone... It's like someone being a porn star at day and a hooker at night. It's like the same stressful job doing it twice.
Well,
it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me.
I mean, there's a difference. I think. I mean, this guy would have powers, and he might just like solving, you know, fighting crime. He's obviously. I mean, they're setting up this story where he's like trying to solve his mother's murder.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you know the same kind of conviction, just to fight crime and to do it any way he can. He needs to make a living. You know, you're not going to make money as a superhero necessarily.
I guess so. It just seems so odd.
I can buy it.
It's
not the most ridiculous thing in the New 52, by...
No, it is not.
It's not in the top 25, probably.
No. No, you could list stuff for days that's much stupider than this. This is by all, almost all reckoning, a pretty good and level-headed book.
Yeah. It's very competent. I like it. I'm a buy. I'm gonna give it another shot.
Yeah, yeah, I think...
Give a couple issues to see how it goes. Something new.
I don't regret buying it. Time will tell how if I'll sour on it or not. But for right now, I'm...
DC's going to put that quote on the front cover of the next Flash.
I think so. I think so.
Eric Ziegenite, I did not regret buying it.
Yes. Because that's how I talk to people. But yeah, I'm a buy.
Double buy.
You just love doing that, don't you?
If I say it now, I don't have to put it in there in post. Less work. Our last book of the week is in the Dark Horse app. I know Eric loves the Dark Horse app.
I am just dying to open it.
I'd like to just get back to the beginning of this book. For some reason, won't let me. We are reading Serenity, Leaves on the Wind, number one. Script by Zach Whedon, pencils George Jonty, inks Carl Story, colors Laura Martin, letters by Michael Heisler. There's been multiple Serenity Firefly comic books.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first one that is actually set after the movie. You know, taking things, moving forward the story. River is now the pilot. Mal and his crew are running out of food. They're dealing with the aftermath of all the stuff in the movie of Wash dying. Zoe is pregnant with their kid. Actually, giving birth in this issue. You're a Firefly fan, Eric? I think you are, right?
I am. Yeah, I enjoy the show and the movie. All this, I definitely have felt like there's more story to tell, but I never really enjoy these books. You know, I have read a couple other ones just to see what they were like. Like, I was in a bookstore and picked up, like, Shepherd's Tale or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I have a lot of time to kill. I'm going to sit down and read this whole book and then buy it. And then I read the whole book and I'm like, I don't want to own this. And that's kind of how I feel about this. It just distracts me at how fan wanky it is, and seeing an artist like struggle to draw like the likenesses of these people, it just kind of bothers me. And like how Jubal Early, like they bring him back and he's like dropping all of his catchphrases. It just always feels like a direct to DVD version of a sequel. It just feels so cheap. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm watching Ace Ventura 3 or something.
I wouldn't put it that that far back?
It's certainly not as bad as that, but that's the feeling that I get from reading it. Like, I don't think Zach Wheaton's a horrible writer, but it really feels like so fan wanky that it's hard for me to look past it.
I would certainly not recommend this to anyone who's not a fan of the show or the movie.
Yeah, it's
that's who I would say. I like this, but I'm a fan of the show and the movie. I don't. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's not amazing, but it's like I love The Matrix, the first The Matrix movie. 2 and 3 are not as good as the first one. Not even close. I still like them because they're not great, they do continue the story. They give you they give you more stuff set in the universe. You get more content. And there is really good stuff mixed in. You just have to, go to the right spots.
Well, for the record, those are terrible movies.
They're not terrible. They're okay.
No, they're quite terrible.
They're not terrible. The Room is terrible.
They are the Phantom Menace bad.
They are not nearly as bad as the Phantom Menace.
They are right on par.
No, they are not.
With the Phantom Menace.
You haven't even seen The Frighteners. I don't even know if I can trust your opinion.
I have seen all the Matrix movies, and they are dumb. Except for the first one. The first one is pretty okay.
Have you seen the
Animatrix? I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's aged terribly well.
Have you seen the Animatrix?
I enjoy the Animatrix.
Yeah, the Animatrix is really good.
Yeah, the Animatrix is really cool. But I doubt I'm the first nerd to say that.
No. You're the second one on this podcast.
Yeah, that's.
But still, I don't think
this on is, you, Dorman.
I know. I don't think this is bad. It is fan wanky, but that's what I expected from it. I guess that's it's about my expectations.
I did too, but I expected it while rolling the fuck out of my eyes. That's like, oh well, here comes fan wank.
I think it's of slightly above average, and if you want more serenity, like plot moving forward, this is the only thing you're going to get. So it's this or nothing.
Yep.
So I choose this over nothing. I think that's pretty much all these licensed comics. That's pretty much like the Buffy comics. I think it's kind of the same premise where, like, you want more of it? Well, they're not making any more TV shows. So, here you go. I guess I'm okay with that. You're not getting any more of the TV show or any more movies. This is all you're going to get. Take it or leave it.
I'm happy with leaving it for the most part.
Okay. I'm of both, depending on the comic.
Yeah. No, depending on. Most licensed stuff can be poor. Like, I've tried watching Buffy, and I don't care for it, so the comics are, like, doubly repellent to me.
Okay. I like this. I've never watched Buffy. I probably should give it a shot, but...
I wonder if you'd like it. I think that the most of it, it has not aged well. It's so 90s. Firefly is kind of timeless. Buffy, not so much. It is very tied into that time. And it's a little gross, in my opinion.
Okay. I'm still going to probably give it a shot eventually, but it's not...
Fair enough.
It's not on the top of the list. It's not even close. I'm a buy on this. I'll buy this. Serenity Leaves on the 1-1. Provided you're a fan. Don't read this if you don't like Firefly Serenity. That's dumb.
I don't really care for it. I'm not a buy on it. However... You know if this is for you or not. This has a ready-made audience. This is like the Harley Quinn books. You know who you are.
It's a very specific audience that they know who they think is going to buy this. That's why they made it. So.
The Venn diagram of comic book nerds and people that want more Firefly and Serenity.
People who actually officially call themselves brown coats.
Yes.
Which I am not one of those people.
No, that's taking it to a weird level.
Yeah.
Maybe you might say it to get into a party at Dragon Con.
I don't think I'd do that either.
It's a party, though.
You were with me at last year at DragonCon.
I know you stood around and looked sad.
I'm not sad. I don't think that's the right word.
It is.
No, I didn't. Well, maybe
I showed people pictures of you at breakfast, and they were like, why do they look so sad?
Well,
they're dressed like Batman and Robin.
Well, I was hungry. That's why I think that was...
Hungry doesn't make me sad. It makes me angry, actually.
Well, I just because I'm displaying sadness doesn't mean I can... I just can't... My facial, you know, I have resting sad face, maybe?
I think so.
That might be it.
You do seem very morose a lot of times.
I like that word. Morose is a good word.
Morose is a pretty fair word. I'm a fan of morose.
Yeah. Serenity of the Leaves on the Wind, number one. That is a split decision. But honestly,
you know if you want it or not.
If you're listening to this, you know if you like it enough to buy it.
And if you didn't know it exists, now we've informed you.
Now you know.
And now you're going to buy it anyway.
Yep.
Even though I'd say don't buy it.
Other notable trades and collections, not very many this week. The Unwritten Volume 8, which I've been told many times is great, and I probably should read it. Maybe eventually. And the Warlock collection by Jim Starlin, which is, from what I haven't read a lot of it. The little I have read is crazy. It's this really bizarre, you know, it's magic, outer space, cosmic, Marvel stuff.
Sounds excellent.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just really weird. It's like, take Steve Ditko's Doctor Strange... Mm-hmm. And then dial it up a couple notches.
I like that sentence.
Okay, well then maybe that collection is for you, Eric.
It from Google search is telling me that it is.
Okay, good.
It's got a guy dressed crazy in space, and it's all 70s looking. It makes me think of the part in what is it called? Supreme Story of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Where, he like goes into space and Rick Veitch draws it and it's all super 70s and it gets all psychedelic. That's what this looks like.
That's probably what he was trying to channel.
I think so. And this is good stuff. It looks delightful. I think this guy sounds just like Ronnie James Dio.
That's not too far off, actually.
Yeah. I think this guy's a holy diver.
Holy diver!
Been down too long in the midnight sea.
Yeah. Other single issues that came out this week. Inhumanity number 2 with Medusa. Thought it was okay. Miracle Man 2, the second thing, came out. I mean, they're just reprinting the old issues at this point, so I'm not going to substitute them for something new that's actually new. We'll probably read it when it's all out. I think that's probably the best for it. And Larfleeze came out this week, but it's well established. We love Larfleeze.
I know. I'm a little upset that I didn't read it. I actually bought it while we've been recording, and I'm going to devour it as soon as we finish up here.
Surprise, surprise! It's the same, and you'll like it.
I would, if I didn't like it, I think I would probably fall on my sword. Fault lies in me.
Is that a euphemism? Your sword?
I wish it was. I don't know. It would take a lot of bendingness to fall on my wang, if that's what you're suggesting.
No, that's not what I'm suggesting at all. You have such a filthy mind.
If you say so.
You can fall on it. All I gotta do is, like, go forward.
I guess that's true to actually, like, yeah.
Just fall forward.
I was imagining, like, actually,
impaling,
like, stabbing
yourself with it.
Yes, like stabbing myself in the same way that I would fall on my sword. But when you're just, yes, if I'm just going to just flatten my wang by falling on top of it, then I guess that would be a less complicated motion.
I don't know why we're talking about this.
I don't know, man. People can't get banter like this just everywhere.
I guess not on the street.
There's got to be some guy with, like, schizophrenia that will talk
just
about.
Just raving on and on about.
Yeah, that'll talk about stabbing himself in the guts with his dick.
Well, when you say it like that, take all the class away from it.
Come on, man.
Gotta be a little bit more charming like that, than that.
I what can I say? I like lowbrow.
I guess that's true. I've also wanted to mention a book I bought. This sixth issue came out maybe a few weeks ago. It's called High Crimes. It's a Monkey Brain book, so it's digital only, and it costs $1 an issue. It's pretty good, actually. I've heard a few things about it online. It's about this guy who climbs Everest but robs the graves of all the people who've frozen to death up there.
Holy shit.
But then there's even... it gets even crazier than that. Him and his helper, this basically, like, exiled former Olympic snowboarder is his, like, assistant. And they get roped into this crazy, you know, government crime project thing. I don't want to spoil it. But you can get 6 issues. They're $1 a pop. And it's pretty good. I like it a lot. So I suggest picking up High Crimes. You can get 6 issues, really pretty good story and art for less than $6. So good deal.
That's not a lot of dollars.
No, it is not. That is it for Weekly Floppies. I know Eric's sad.
I mean, can you not hear me weeping?
I have to console him every single week after we finish this podcast, folks. I don't know if you realize that. He is just beside himself because it's the longest period of time until we do it again.
I mean, I don't know if anyone realizes it, but Robbie has just edited out something like 40 minutes of me crying.
It's rough. Every time it's just weeping. I want to throw it in there as a like an Easter egg, but it's kind of depressing.
It's a lot. It's really embarrassing.
It's a little morbid. I mean, just listening to weeping.
Yeah. And it's like really intense weeping too. Like I like go into dry heaves a couple of times. it is dark.
And, well, I mean, it's appropriate from Thor, God of Thunder.
There was so much puking.
There was a lot of puking.
There was just vomit everywhere. Jesus Christ. I can't wait until the scat issue next week.
God. That's not next week. Next month.
You're right.
It's Esad Ribic. Come on.
I know. He's got to take his sweet time drawing the troll scat.
The trolls are dead. Come on, Eric. They're not going to.
Well, that's the last thing that you do, man.
Oh, I guess that's true. I didn't think about that.
Yep.
Okay. On to Nerd Boy Book Club.
On to it.
On to it. Lead the charge.
Onward.
Onward and up and at them. Up and at them. Okay. Up and at them.
Up and at them.
The goggles, they do nothing.
Oh, man, this is very self-indulgent of us.
That's, yes. Yes. This week we are reading the second portion of Jonathan Hickman's run on Fantastic Four and FF. We cut it into a nice solid second chunk. This is, if you're reading along at home, it's FF Volume 1, Number 1 through 11, and Fantastic Four... 600 through 604 in that order. This is seeing the continuance of all those plot threads, and they're kind of tying together.
Yeah,
everything's
starting to gel really well.
Yeah, seeing Reed Richards enlisting the help of all his greatest villains to hunt down the alternate versions of himself that are trying to ignite the War of the Four Cities. I think that's the most succinct way I can put it.
It felt very synced.
Synced, yeah. It culminates with them enlisting the help of Galactus to do battle with a quartet of Celestials.
Yep, he kind of kicks the shit out of them too.
He does, but it's a crazy amount of stuff happens.
Mm. It feels. It reads a whole heck of a lot better. than the early stuff. And it, I think even more is happening, but it's he's really hit his stride. And I guess you've got enough backstory at this point that it's not overwhelming to see all this stuff happen. You can follow what's going on, and it feels everything feels really natural and artful. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, and there's we even touched on there's also a whole bunch of stuff involving the Kree and how they're clashing with the Inhumans, plus we get the return of Johnny Storm. I want to ask you, Eric, what do you think about, did you, that moment, even though it's like expected?
Yes, I was just talking with a friend about this, that you knew he was going to get brought back, but I think that this is really kind of the best way to do a death and return of a character. That it feels like, I mean, it's a cheap ploy, but it fits in the story really well.
Yeah, it's grounded in the story why he survives.
Yes.
Because
to be fair, he actually does die multiple times.
He dies, but he's in the negative zone where nothing dies. Everything dies, and yet you don't, I mean, you just keep coming back with the Beatles. More Beatles. God, that's so creepy. Weird bugs that sew them back together.
Yes.
And he keeps burning them. Stops the burnings.
Jeez.
But, yeah, you get the nice reveal of Johnny with fucking Annihilus on a leash with the control rod, like has goo, like negative zone goo on his arm. That's what it is, isn't it?
I don't even know.
It's like a webbing of goo. Like goo webbing.
I thought it was the witch blade.
That's true. It could have been the witch blade.
Probably is the witch blade.
I don't think that's crossed over to Marvel Universe yet.
I'm glad that it hasn't.
They have Angela. Maybe Witchblade's next. No?
Let's hope so.
I think this is the definition of like epic and big and... When people talk, this is the best thing about Jonathan Hickman. When he has all this stuff of great, like it's, there's nothing small about this. These are like, there's multiple moments in this where Fantastic Four are like, this is bigger than us. What are we? We need to just leave. We need to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
When, I mean, and that's, like, I think you made that point about when we just talked about Flash. Where, like, you know, he's trying to foil some guys stealing jewels.
Yes. It's now, guys in long underwear robbing banks. And Marvel's telling stories about space gods killing planets. It almost seems like there's two different kinds of audiences for superheroes. And I don't know that anyone is wanting... the stuff that isn't big and bombastic and filled with all this hyperbole. That's what I want. It's, I mean...
That's what I read superhero comics for.
I mean, exactly. Superhero comics, they are like modern, like, mythology, and it's like the stories of Hercules or something. Like, that's what it should be. It should be big... and larger than life, and absolutely crazy, and that is the way I like it. And this is exactly on point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point where the Kree Armada is bombarding Earth. Avengers are doing their best to to help the situation. Johnny Storm arrives with the entire Annihilation Wave behind him, and the Inhumans in Adelon in the mix. And at that point, Reed Richards calls Galactus, and he's like, this is the moment we're supposed to call you for, right? He's like, no, this is nothing. Like, the Earth's getting bombarded. Like, ships are crashing into buildings. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, don't worry about it. He kills all the Kree, or a lot of them. They fly away, and humans follow them, and then the Celestials arrive. And it's just, gigantic, epic... space beings battle royale at that point. And it's so big, and it's how well it's done belies the fact that how easily it could be corny. Like, how difficult it is to make it, to deliver this, you know, momentum and importance behind it. To his credit, it is seamless. And it really delivers the feeling of, like, power.
Mm-hmm.
Bigness.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite thing about this is the fact that Reed Richards, the Reed Richards of this Earth, of 616 Earth, are Reed Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Is they show him, like, how special he is, not because of his intelligence, but because of his, like, compassion and love of his family. That's the thing that makes the difference in this battle. I think that's what makes this run on Fantastic Four so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so popular is because tying, like, showing the importance of Reed Richards, not just being this, like, genius, Asperger's guy. Like, he's not socially, cold. He loves his family, and that is more important to him than anything. And they have this scene where at the end, where the only thing where his Reed's father, who's he delivers this little monologue where, you know, he's traveled through time and seen this same battle countless times, and they always lose up until this point. Like, he's organized them many, many times, rewriting history over and over again to try and get this for them to win. And the only reason they win this time is because of Franklin,
mm-hmm.
who is unwilling to not to let them lose, unwilling to see his family die. And in every other version, every other Reed abandons his family, and Franklin is never he never develops this way, never develops this will to save the day. And they say, like, well, little young Val is like, she tells her father, you know, he made the wrong decision. She thinks he made the wrong decision abandoning the council, you know, because he could have saved countless lives, mm-hmm. doing it. And it's like, and even Reed's father says this is that would be the rational decision. But by staying with his family, he creates Franklin, the only thing that could stop these Celestials. And I think that's beautiful. It shows the power of family,
mm-hmm.
and love, if you want to, you know, try and, if you want to even say that. And it emphasizes that part of Reed, where he's known as being this genius super nerd. But the thing that makes him transcend above everyone else is his compassion.
It's good to see that a book like this, I mean, it is a, and we talked about this last episode, that the overall trend in comics seems to be getting grittier and darker.
Yes.
Although, I mean, it's just the stakes are higher because we're not as impressed with guys in long johns robbing banks. That it's more and more, it seems like it has to be billions of lives on the line to have any emotional resonance. And I think even that is starting to become a little passe. You know, we're reading, like, several different events happening at once, and there's a Celestial in space, and there's universes colliding, and there are all these things happening, and it's...
Right.
Starting to get a little corny, but I guess where I'm going with all this is, despite the fact that everything is getting, like, so much more serious in these storylines, this still manages to paint the Marvel Universe as an appealing place, you know, for all the reasons you've just outlined.
Yeah.
That it's not just getting grittier and grittier, you know, just to the point of stupidity.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I understand perfectly what you mean. I couldn't agree more. It's not like there isn't darkness in this book.
Right.
There is a lot of it. Mm-hmm. The scenes with Johnny dying.
Yes, they're over very and grisly. Over,
yeah, are really grisly and really dark. And like he wants to stay dead. You know, not be just this a gladiator for Annihilus to play with, basically, for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Until he gets killed again.
I'm glad that a story like this can exist.
Yeah, it's rooted in good storytelling.
And I think exactly. That's what I was going to say. Is I'm glad that this kind of story can exist without like what's her name, Alicia.
Yes.
Like, there's not an arc where she gets like raped or something. Like, it's just so the thing can like get angry. I think that is my biggest complaint about this story, is there's not enough thing.
There's a big I remember specifically in the last portion of this. I mean, there's not really any kind of one chunk of this as a specific arc or anything, but there's a very good a bit with the thing that I can remember distinctly. I wasn't sure where it was
in this
because in the last bit we're actually going to be reading FF the following FF books see some of this story from a different perspective. So we're going to see some of the stuff we didn't see in this portion. We're going to see some of the same story from different points of view, from what the kids are experiencing along with Doom. You know, Doom just kind of vanishes at a certain point. Along with another Reed, and you don't know what happens, but we're gonna get that. Plus, there's a really good bit with the thing. It's so good. God, just thinking about it, a lot more Doom in the thing. I know in the last bit,
you're getting me all excited.
Yeah.
How great is it on that tangent?
Mm-hmm.
How great is it to have fucking, like, for real Spider-Man in this? Doesn't it feel so good?
I know. I don't... It's great. Every time I read it, I forget, like...
Mm-hmm.
Why is Kraken Peter Parker, you know, making awkward jokes about Black Bolt's wives and stuff?
I loved him in this book.
Yeah.
Like, when he appears and he starts... just, like, all of his, like, little asides are hilarious. Like, how he starts talking about Doom's brain, and then he's like, why is everyone staring at me? It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I'm ready for another Peter Parker. I'm ready for him to be back. He'll be back soon.
It's coming.
April or so. Although it's still, God knows what Dan Slott's going to put him through, but we'll see. At least it'll actually be him. I read Superior Spider-Man this week, by the way, as well. And there's him wandering through like the wasteland of what is left of his mind.
Oh wow,
that's the only part of it I enjoy.
The rest of it was
just
making out with little people and. It was, and like trying to kill Aunt May for no good reason.
It was just goblin infighting and stuff. And
Jesus,
don't even care. But that portion was very, very good. But the rest of it, blah. Back to Fantastic. This is just so good. This is by far the best Fantastic Four run I can think of.
It is delightful. I am delighted.
Delighted. Do you have anything else you wanted to bring up, Eric?
I don't think so. You haven't nerded out about Black Bolt enough.
I know. I didn't nerd out. I did not nerd out about Black Bolt.
No.
I just think I get redundant after a while about Black Bolt's the best. And he's good. I really did enjoy his scene with Medusa. I think that was my favorite bit of him. Among all the things him mutilating giant space tentacle monsters. I think he did battle with Cthulhu and, like, made him, you know, turn into space dust. and all that, and him doing battle with the Kree and being, you know, the badass he is. I think my favorite moment of him was just him with Medusa, you know, in their, he's able to speak, you know, in their mind, minds, shared mind, I guess. And she's like, he's suddenly got all these wives from all these universal Inhumans. And she's like, what, well, what am I now? And he's like, this role has been thrust upon me. I can give, all I can give you is what you are, that you are my first wife and you're still my voice and I love you and blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was, really good that, you know, he, you know, he's just taking up this role as monarch and he's leading these people because to not would be against his nature, I guess. But he gives her all he can give her. And, you know, if that is, and hopefully it's enough. I thought that was really cool. I like that a lot.
Everyone's so serious in these comics.
I did, what issue is the one with all the little stories in it? Which one is that? The little, like the one that has all the different artists, like Galactus and the, when Lineal Francis Yu drawing Galactus.
I think I know what you mean.
It's the same issue with that in it,
isn't it? It's the issue 600, isn't it?
So is it 600?
Because that's the one that's extremely. It's like 100 pages.
That must be it. Let me see.
Because it is slam jam packed full of stuff. 101 pages.
Yeah, it is.
Crazy,
yeah, that's it.
Long.
That's the one. It has the art and all those little stories. I love all of them, even though they're completely different. I liked the Inhuman one. I liked, you know, that was the one with them, that the scene I just discussed. Plus, Lineal Francis Yu drawing Galactus.
Miranda shot him, though.
He did not, even though he is half naked at one point, but he did not. And then that little weird little story with Franklin, you know, practicing his powers with Leech. And they're like, there's like superheroes. It's the same guy who did the Omega the Unknown relaunch, the same artist. But I really like all those little tiny stories at the end of it. They're like a little palate cleanser. In this, I think they worked really well on that.
It was a big book. Holy crispy crap!
Holy crispy crap! But yeah, I don't think of anything else I'd like to mention, but. We will be finishing this arc next week. I can actually tell you what we're going to be reading. It's FF 12 through number 23, and then Fantastic Four 605 through 611, including the 605.1 issue. And that is the end of Hickman's run, and then after that, he jumps over and starts his work on Avengers. And he continues a lot of the same kind of big, epic things, just with an even larger cast.
That's exactly what he needs, is
a cast
that's larger than everyone. He needs double everyone. Even triple everyone.
Triple everyone! Voices! This is that's Fantastic Four, Jonathan Hickman's run. I am excited to read the end because there are some great Doom moments and a really great Thing story mixed in with this last bit. Cannot anticipate it more.
Well, I am just peeing my pants in anticipation.
All of your pants?
All of them. I'm just stacking, putting them in a stack and hosing them off.
So that's the end of Nerdboy Book Club, and we're going to bring, that'll bring us to the last segment of the week, and it's Eric's favorite segment.
Wait, what's happening?
Come on, Eric. You know what it is. It's the Brian Lee O'Malley Tweet Quiz.
Shit.
You act like you don't enjoy it.
It's like being beaten with clubs and having my teeth pulled out.
At the same time?
Yes.
That sounds like you'd gotta just pass out from the pain after a while.
Maybe you would, weakling.
So, for those unfamiliar, this segment, I pull three tweets from Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator of Scott Pilgrim. I take three tweets from his feed from last week, and then I insert one of my own, one that I've written. Eric's job is to try and determine which one is the one I wrote and which one doesn't belong, so to speak. Eric has, I think, won exactly one quarter. No, you know, you're 3 for 9 now. You're batting 333.
Exactly.
Repeating. So you could bat 400 if you get this one right, Eric. That is Ted Williams territory. That's MVP right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you ready?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Number one, I need 1,000 naps. Number two, I wish I was a rap. Number three, wish I was a scented candle. Number four, I'm officially on the handle. One more time for the listeners and Eric's benefit. One, I need 1,000 naps. Number two, I wish I was a rap. Number three, wish I was a scented candle. Four, I'm officially on the handle. You like that, Eric? It rhymes.
It does.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
This is a tough one. Are you proud of yourself?
A little bit. I'll be more proud if you actually get it wrong, because if you get it right, it doesn't mean anything. It just means you're really smart.
Well, I am really smart, but I think if I got this right all the time, there'd be something wrong with me.
That's probably true. You have some weird, demented insight.
Yes, I think so.
Into Brian, it's even weirder because you have to know him and even like my weird creative thought process with this, which is just not even, I don't even, like, it's not plottable. I don't have any kind of overseeing strategy. You have an answer?
This is complicated. You're going to have to give me a minute to ponder.
A minute?
Mm-hmm.
1 minute?
Mm-hmm.
I'll get my hourglass out.
You had best.
My minute hourglass.
You should stop talking to me, some bitch. I am, I'm going with my gut on this.
Ooh.
And, my feeling is you're trying to misdirect me.
Okay.
You're probably playing a ruse within a ruse, but I'm going with this.
Okay.
But I'm going with scented candle.
Wish I was a scented candle is your final answer?
Yeah, that's what I'm picking.
Incorrect.
Which one was it?
I'm officially on the handle.
Ah. See, I knew you were misdirecting me with the rhyme. I just picked the wrong one.
I found them in that order. Mm-hmm. So I found the naps, and then I said the rap, and I was like, "Well, they rhyme." Mm-hmm. So then I found another one. I'm like, "I'll just rhyme with it." And it works in with the rap thing, right? Yeah. But now you're three for ten, batting 300. It's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
If we're playing baseball.
A lot of baseball metaphors.
Well, this is exactly like baseball.
It involves roughly as much scratching.
And a lunatic throwing something at you at insane speeds.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz. Eric is unsuccessful, but there's always another chance.
There is.
He loves it. I know he loves it so much.
I do so love it.
Yeah. But with that, that brings this episode to a close. Wah, wah. Until next week, at least. Until next week. You like my millionaire voice?
I think that's how we should go out today. Oh, God, what's the guy's name from Gilligan's Island?
The millionaire and his wife?
Yes.
Actually, I don't remember his name. But
It's like Colonel Faverden the Third or something. It's something.
Yes, it's really pretentious.
It is.
I can do that. I can do the outro in the millionaire's voice. You gotta do the prospector though.
You know what, buddy? That's a deal.
Okay. So this was episode 38. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can also find us on facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. I think I'm just morphing into Alan Moore.
Yeah, you're maybe a little bit. Yes,
I don't know what's happening. You can also find us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us there, leave us reviews. We really like it when you do that. You can also find us on the Tumblr. That's handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at HBCHour. Leave us suggestions, criticisms, hate mail.
Hate mail is my favorite.
You can also find me, Robbie, at Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. That's MixmasterCereal. And I'm at Tumblr at the same name. Eric, where can I find you and your things online?
Well, when I'm not near the bottom of a mine, you can look at my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can look at all the other hoodads that I get up to on the internet by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me, why don't you? My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example. Ew.
Till next time, folks, have a good one.
It's some rock and roll for you there.
I don't know why that makes me laugh so much. I'm like a rainbow.